And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I am David.
And Grace is not with us today because her camp does not yet have wireless access, but instead I have brought a friend of mine who was on the show a really long time ago. If any of you were listening back then, like around episode 40 or so, I would like to introduce my friend Graham.
Hello!
Who you might recognize...
I'll let you do the intro since you're the host. I'm sorry.
Yay, I get to the intro. Okay, so I was going to say, you might recognize Graham as the voice of Gul-Padar from Tales from the DMZ, and we had an episode on Cardassians a while back where he guested, back when it was just me and Bob. Like, I think it was like episode set, like 50 or something. It was like 2 years ago by now.
That is in fact correct. That was what I was going to say. I am also Gul-Padar on Tales from the DMZ, who apparently Oren does not want to give any more episodes, Oren.
That is not true, and you're a liar. I want to give all the episodes, but I can only write so many episodes. There was no room for him in the episode that I just wrote. It just wasn't happening. Too many characters already, Graham. I needed to cut characters, not add more.
This is what you claim, but I know the truth. I know the truth, Oren.
Sometimes the truth hurts.
It's true.
All right, so before we get on to our main topic for today, we have two listener emails, which I'm going to read. Hold on just 1 second. All right, our first email is from Jera, who says, Hey guys, I just finished listening to your episode on the law in Star Trek, and I really enjoyed it, particularly the observation about the reasons for limited judicial decisions and how our current legal system works behind the curve of popular opinion, and how all that applies to Trek. Two things I'd love to hear discussed if you have Elise back for another episode, which by the way we totally will, are diplomatic immunity and psychic assaults. On diplomatic immunity, I'm having trouble remembering whether we see any reference to it in Trek or not, and if not, whether you think that would be problematic in the future, especially given the importance of diplomatic missions on TNG. To be fair, the number of diplomats on Trek who turn out to be sketchy, if not criminal, is pretty high. On psychic assaults, I'm primarily thinking of violations, where Jev psychically assaults Troy, causing her to fall into a coma. But at the end of the episode, they just let the guy go with his colleagues promising to take him to see a doctor, even though they themselves refer to the attacks as a form of rape. Earlier in the episode, Picard says, we have no legal basis for such a prosecution. Memory invasion is simply not a crime we've ever had to contend with. That seems absurd to me, even if the exact situation hadn't occurred before. Troy had measurable physical consequences from the attack. Seems to me like that would have been a great time to break some new legal ground by seeing if assault laws could apply. Maybe they were just worried that someone would look back at the records and try to prosecute Spock for Star Trek VI. So thank you, Jared, for that email. We will definitely have Elise back on, and we will ask her questions about the law. I mean, like, we only got like a fifth of the way through what we wanted to talk about. Like, there's so much more stuff. And, you know, when you have a prosecutor who wants to be on your show, you don't say no. All right. And we have one more email, and this is from the Pastel Nerd, which really just feels like a band name or like a some kind of really cool like online handle, which I guess is what it is now that I think about it. So the email is titled "The Defense of the Maligned." Oh, I think I'm in trouble here. So I've been going back and listening to old episodes, and I just listened to the fan fiction one, and I feel the need to defend fan fiction, particularly fan fiction about pre-existing characters. I can't speak from a writer's perspective, but the reason I read so much fan fiction is that I've come to like these characters, and most of the time would rather spend more time with them than spend time with characters I don't know if I'm going to like or not. So I think the lesson we can draw from this is no one should go back and listen to our previous episodes, because I don't want to be held responsible for anything I said in the past. I just want to be a free spirit, say what I say, and have no, you know, have no accountability.
That was the old Oren. This is the new, different. Is this like... Wait, I just think, is this like Oren 7, and that was like Oren 3, like Weyoun?
We operate on a doctrine of Oren infallibility.
That's a good one. I like that, Graham. That's a good doctrine. Okay. I'm going to declare that I am infallible. Is that how it works, right?
Yes.
Okay. So she goes on to say, and I guess I should address this point. That's a fair point, Pastel Nerd, and certainly people can read and enjoy whatever fan fiction they want. From my perspective, it was just that I feel like I know most of the Star Trek characters that I like pretty well, with some minor exceptions, like, you know, Ro or Dr. Solar. But, like, you know, all the main cast members, I know them pretty well, and it weirds me out reading other authors' interpretations of those characters. And that's not just a fan fiction thing. That applies to tie-in fiction, too. Because, like, they don't have the actors there to interpret for them. So, like, even like Andrew J. Robinson's book, which is fantastic, the characters who aren't Garak don't feel quite right. Like, Kira doesn't really sound like Kira. She sounds like Garak imitating Kira, which I guess is actually what's happening. we'll read the second paragraph of this. I also wanted to talk about the recent backlash in nerd culture against the idea that a true fan has to know all the things. I would like to preface this by saying I know that saying a fan has to know everything about the thing that they are a fan of isn't fair to new fans and is often used by sexists as a way to exclude female fans, which makes me feel awkward about what I'm about to say, that I may become one. Anyway, because I am one, a female fan, I assume is what she means. Anyway, I like people who know all the things are now considered kind of snobbish, which bothers me because knowing all the things, or at least attempting to, is my favorite part of being a fan. What do you think? Is that really a good thing, or am I just paranoid? Do I sound like one of the guys who say not all men in a feminist argument, or is that my paranoia again? Thanks for your time, Pastel Nerd. Well, that's an interesting question. I'll field this to my guest host first. David, how do you feel about that? Did you understand my reading of her email?
Yeah, I think so. And I've kind of been in both boats or both camps in the past, where it's like, you know, in a way, like right now, I'm a fan of Doctor Who. I haven't seen all the episodes. I don't know all the companions. There's other franchises that I could say I like, I enjoy, I want to see more of it, but I don't know all the details. And in the case of Trek, I used to know every episode title, sometimes even the episode number, and then could give you a synopsis. But then, you know, things happen and years go by, and I don't know all the episode titles and everything now. So I think if somebody does, if they're like a trivia, you know, buff, and they want to know every last detail and name and coordinates and everything and title, that's great. But I don't think that should be the bar by which we measure are they a fan or not. And I know, you know, there's people that try to say casual fan, hardcore fan, or, you know, long time, whatever. If you're a fan of it, I think people should embrace that. You know, whether they're a brand new person that is just learning and just entering into the fandom of, like, they just got into Trek with the JJ movies and now they're checking out TNG and DS9. Like, we shouldn't say, oh, you're a new fan. You're not at the high level of a bar that some, like, that's elitist. That's snobbish. That's, you know, that's more divisive than inclusive. I think we should embrace new fans and casual fans, and, you know, not everybody has the memory for it. Not everybody cares to know every last, you know, who was the production assistant on this particular episode or whatever. So, and whether it's male or female, you know, in a way, it to me, that's the same thing, where it's like, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. And if somebody else, if you see that somebody else is enjoying the thing that you enjoy, you know, have fun with it, you know, embrace them, let them, you know, share it with you. It's not going to, I don't think you should try to figure out, well, how long have you been a fan or how much information do you know about it? That gets to, you know, to be too much. Just have fun with it.
Graham, do you have any thoughts on this matter?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mostly agree with David there. Trivia is not a bad thing necessarily. I think it's actually pretty cool to know all the trivia stuff, but it's a double-edged sword. It all depends on how you use it. If you use trivia to be exclusionary, if you use it to say, well, you're not good enough to be a fan of Star Trek or anything because of you don't know all these details, then that's shitty. And that's when you get into like the not all men category that she was talking about. That's when you're being an asshole, for lack of a better word. Well, but if you just know trivia, then that's not, you know, evil, and someone shouldn't discriminate against you for that same reason.
Well, and I have also ran into it in the world of comic books, because I've been a big fan and collector of comic books, like, since I was a little tiny kid all the way up to, you know, recent. And I remember, like, you know, if would pick something, let's say, you know, recently X-Men. There's a movie out and everybody's, ooh, X-Men. I remember I would say I like Wolverine, and I used to draw pictures of him and get the action figures, and you know, other friends would be like, yeah, he's cool, but I like Colossus or whatever. But then there was a couple friends or, you know, comic book people in at school or whatever that I liked a particular, my Wolverine that I got interested in was the brown and yellow suit, and, you know, that suit, but that era, And I remember people going, "Oh, well, that's the new Wolverine. You're not a fan enough unless you know and remember the original Wolverine, or you know, different incarnations of it." Like, and I just started thinking, okay, I just didn't read those. I didn't get into it at that point. And it's like, I love the character. It shouldn't have to be like, oh, well, which version of it do you like, the original or the reboot or the you know, the later version of it where he had an event that changed the character. Just, you know, it,
yeah,
just...
yeah. That's one of many problems in comic books, and it's, yeah, it sort of applies across the fandom board. Like, if you find a cool thing that you like in the Star Trek expanded universe, God help you if you don't know the rest of the details that it ends up being connected to. Doran and I actually recently had a debate with a friend of ours about this, because we like Grand Admiral Thrawn, both Orin and I, but I do not care for the mythos he's connected to. And this friend of ours was like, you have to use the whole mythos if you're going to use it in any role-playing material you're doing with Star Wars, or there's no point. You can't just include Thrawn. And I'm like, why not?
I'm just going to include Thrawn, just for the record. I'm not going to include any of this Emperor battle mind, you know, bull honky.
Yeah.
And I think that what it comes down to is, like, knowing all the things is great. Like, being really knowledgeable on a subject and wanting to discuss it in great depth, that's awesome. I mean, obviously, I do that for Star Trek, right? I've seen every episode of Star Trek, most of them multiple times, and I really try to think about how it's all connected. But the important thing to understand is that knowing, like, you know, having an in-depth knowledge of the franchise does not make your opinion more valid than someone who doesn't have that same in-depth knowledge on things that they do know. Like, see, that's the important thing. Like, on the one hand, if someone who hasn't seen Star Trek says all Star Trek is terrible, then obviously that opinion is not very valid because they don't have any information to base that opinion on. But if they watch the first couple episodes of TNG and are like, I really don't like these episodes, you can't go to them and be like, no, those episodes, like, TNG is a great show because of all these later episodes that are great. You're not allowed not to like those early ones. Cause it's like, no, they're still allowed to form their own opinions, right?
Yeah,
so I've also ran into elements of it where, like, I focused heavily on the Klingon characters. Even going back in when I was like a kid, I just loved the Klingons from you know, Errand of Mercy with Kor and Kang. And obviously, when TNG came in and DS9, they just fleshed out the Klingon. So I really focused in on the Klingons. Now, there's other people that have focused their studies and fandom on the Vulcans and knowing all the different, you know. So it's one thing to say, like, know all the things, but because on one hand, you could say I kind of know all the things or a lot of the things about Klingon, but that doesn't make me any better or, you know, worse or different. You know, it's just different if somebody else knows all about the Bajorans or all about this other thing, because it's kind of hard to know all of the things. But My main point that I want to, like, cover all of it with is try to learn all the things. Like, do your research. If you like it, you know, spend time looking into it. But for those people that either do or claim to know all the things, don't use that as a measuring stick to try to measure other people's fandom. Just share it if they're interested in. Because, you know, there's times where somebody would be like, oh, you like Klingons, huh? And I'm like, yeah, this and this and that, and I get into it, and they're like, I don't really care about the Klingons. So in that case, like, don't force all the knowledge on people who aren't interested, but if somebody is curious, you know, share the knowledge, but don't use that as a measuring stick or valuing somebody's worth by whether they know those things or not.
And the eternal words of Will Wheaton, don't be a dick. I think that's how we could sum up this conversation. So, on to our main topic for today, which is the planets we would never want to go to, and some planets that we do want to go to, because we've been having some kind of heavy topics recently, and next week we're going to have Kathy Ferguson on, so we'll be talking about politics in Star Trek, and then the week after that we'll have Jera on, we'll be talking about, like, labor in Star Trek, so we were like, man, we should do a light, fun episode. So I have this list of planets that we don't want to go to, and it's actually much longer than I originally thought. So I'm going to go ahead and start at the bottom because I want to end with my personal favorite. And since I'm the show host, I can do that. So Graham, you added...
Tyranny!
I know, right? Ha! Boom. So Graham, you added a Paradise, which... Does that planet actually have a name?
It doesn't actually have a name. It's just the episode it's in is named Paradise, and it's the planet with the human colonists that Sisko and O'Brien go to. I don't remember a lot of details. It's been a while since I watched the whole of Deep Space Nine. I think this was in the first season.
Or second.
But yeah, they go to this planet. Their technology is outlawed. You have to wear, like, hemp-spun clothes. And if you do something wrong, they put you in the punishment box, which is a box in the hot sun that you bake in.
And get dehydrated in. And possibly die.
Yeah, and if you're a member of Starfleet, they put your commanding officer in there, and then he can't have any water until he changes out of his uniform and adopts the planet ways.
Yeah, God, that woman is so creepy. She's just like...
And they left this planet alone at the end of that episode.
At least they took away, like, crazy evil cult leader lady.
I'm not sure that that will help the crazy cult that they left on the planet. One can only hope the Dominion came and blew it up.
Yeah, they didn't seem like, you know, I would think the revelation that we'd been forced to live in this, like, wilderness and, like, die of smallpox or easily treatable diseases would have elicited more of an angry response from them. Instead, they were like, huh, well, that's interesting. Maybe this is good. Maybe we liked this. Like, to me, that's
It's so cool to live without technology and to be put in the punishment box, like Alexis taught us.
And it's not like this was a colony of people that set out to do that, right? Like, this was just regular people who have been brainwashed by this Alexis woman. And I'm very surprised that Sisko was okay with just leaving them there. Like, at the very least, you figure, like, they would have beamed down, you know, sent back some, some counselors to make sure that everyone is okay.
Or at least, like, maybe acknowledged to the Federation, yo, this planet has some fucked up shit going on, because it is a human planet. These are
We try not to swear on the show.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I swear a lot, I know. I'm gonna try to
I do
that.
Too when I'm not on the show. I've trained myself.
I have not trained myself. I am unfiltered.
Yeah. So, basically, the reason we don't want to go to this planet, I think, is because we're afraid that Alexis's, like, minions have taken over and are like, this is the worst, and, like, we don't want to go in the punishment box.
Any planet that has a punishment box is not a planet I want to go to, like, frankly.
Yeah, that's not a bad measuring stick. It's like, check out a planet. Hey, do you guys have a punishment box? If no, okay, we can talk.
Well, but then again, I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to be put in a box. Like, nobody puts baby in the corner of the box, but at least you're alive. You're in a box. There's several planets on this list where you die. And do we want to jump to the keep off the grass planet?
No, we're saving that one. That one's being saved till the end.
Okay. There's a couple other ones like that where, you know, you do the wrong thing. And, there's also one from TOS that is similar, but which one are we going to go to next?
All right, we're going to keep working our way up the list. Next, we have Ecos from TOS, Pattern of Force. And Graham's notes are entirely various repetitions of Nazi planet.
That is because this was, I admit, one of the ones I found trolling Memory Alpha. I have not watched a lot of TOS, but this was, in fact, the Nazi planet. An alien leader... who had his planet it was in anarchy and, like, disorder, decided that the best way to get things running efficiently was to institute the system of government that the Nazis had and name himself the Führer. And he was actually a really nice guy, so the system sort of worked, but then, like, an actual racist got power who had been reading a lot of Nazi scriptures and started, like, doing Nazi stuff to a neighboring planet. And
yeah,
that guy got assassinated by the end of the episode, but the next guy was like, we're going to do things as the Führer meant, and the Führer's dead, and we're steeped in Nazi ideology, and Kirk was like, we're leaving.
Yeah, like, they sort of gloss over the fact that the problem with Nazi ideology wasn't just Hitler, right? Like, Hitler was just the spokesperson for it. It's not like, like you just said, even if you put a nice person in charge of being Führer, it's only a matter of time. Right, you can't have an ideology which is based around hating someone else and then be like, no, but we'll channel that hatred for good. It will be great.
Yeah, not to mention that the Nazi system was actually based, if you research it, a lot on intimidation and, like, really horrible stuff, and was not anywhere near as efficient as it liked to claim to be.
Yeah, we tend to remember the Nazis as being, like, this ultimate evil boss enemy that we had to defeat, and because we measure ourselves by defeating them, we like to build them up. And, like, you know, not like, they were definitely dangerous and powerful, but they were not as like crazy ultra good at everything as we like to remember them being. Like, you know, a big part of why Germany did so well in World War II was more because the people they were fighting were just completely unprepared for war than because they were, like, the greatest at fighting wars.
Also because they spent most of their money building, like, tanks and more tanks and guns.
Yeah, that'll do it. So the so that one's pretty obvious. Don't go there because it's still full of Nazis, even if maybe they're not as bad as the last guy. And it does seem odd that the guy who decided to instill all this was a Federation historian. Although, then again, the Federation thinks the Federation history books apparently record Christianity as having been what caused the fall of the Roman Empire. So maybe they're just confused. Maybe they just don't know what happened in that time period.
The Federation's, like, anything before the 2000s is really kind of murky.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure what happened before that. All right.
We know about the eugenics wars. That's when history starts, man.
1996, fighting in the trenches against Khan, Noonien, and Sung.
I remember the war against Khan. I lost, like, three brothers there.
I didn't know you had three brothers, but now I learn something new every day. All right, so we move up. Continuing the list of things Graham added to the story, and I actually should have made this clear at the beginning, is that a lot of these are planets, like, there are some obvious ones, like, that have, you know, like, this was a planet that exploded, and we probably don't want to go there. But these are planets that, a lot of them at least, are planets that seemed okay. Like, at the end of the episode, they were like, this is gonna be fine! So this next one we have is Angosia 3, which is from TNG, The Hunted, and Graham, you also added this one, so why don't you go ahead and tell me what's up?
All right, I will be very busy at this midpoint of the episode. But yeah, this was from... The Hunted is the Space Veterans episode, maybe a good way for people to remember it. And it had a planet that wanted to join the Federation, but Picard found out their terrible secret, which is that they had a bunch of super soldiers that they'd engineered to fight battles. And they were hyper aware of everything. They had advanced memories, and they had advanced senses, and they could kill people really super good. They also had trigger phrases that made them kill people. So when they came back from the war and there was no more war going on, people would say trigger phrases in conversation, and then suddenly like 84 people were dead. The Angosians didn't like that and put these guys in jail on a moon. And the one prisoner they talked to admits that the moon is not a bad jail. It's a really nice jail as jails go, but it is a jail, so he hates it.
Which is not unreasonable, right?
No, that's not unreasonable at all. The thing is, then they tell the Angosians tell Picard, well, don't get involved in this. It's a matter of internal security. Convict guy gets loose on the Enterprise, breaks some stuff. He talks to Crusher and Troy, and they're like, he's actually a really nice person. Troy especially kind of bonds with him. And then he escapes the Enterprise, goes back to Moon Prison, and leads Prison Break. And he's talked to Troy, and while Troy and he's revealed that he's, you know, a nice person on the inside underneath all this genetic conditioning, he does admit that his genetic conditioning makes it really hard for him not to kill people. And he has to actively resist, like, not killing Troy and not killing Riker or Worf. So then at the end of the episode, he and a bunch of other inmates who we've never met storm the governmental complex with guns, demanding that they be given back their freedoms. And the government guy is like, no, we're not going to do that. Picard, help us out. And Picard's like, I can't get involved in your internal security. Later, bro.
Wasn't that Cochrane, but not Cochrane?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, the first time he appeared in Star Trek, as I recall. I don't remember his name.
James Cromwell. Yeah, that
yeah.
was the
yeah.
first...
I was like, James Earl Jones? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I remember that. It's like, you know, too bad, it's your problem. And at that point, they're not ready to be part of the Federation. They got to handle their stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it wasn't bad how Picard handled the situation necessarily, because that's very, you know, good application of the Prime Directive. But the prison breakout and the fact that these guys are conditioned to kill makes you think that after that, it probably degenerated into a horrible military dictatorship where people begged for death from their super soldier overlords, because if the nicest guy among them is actively repressing his kill desires, there's going to be like 15 other people who aren't.
Now, in fairness to this episode, they did mention that the Angosian, the super soldiers, are only aggressive when they feel threatened. So, like, maybe there could be, I don't know, I'd like to think, because I like that episode, I want to give it a more optimistic ending, right? Like, I'd like to think that they could, you know, with help and proper medical treatment, they could maybe be reconditioned.
Well, yeah, but remember the Angosians really didn't want to do that. Like the Enterprise kept pointing out to them, you could do that, and you could also reverse the chemicals that make them so crazy. And the Angosians were like, no, we're not going to do that. That's too much work.
Like, what if we need them to fight another war? Like, that was actually a thing that someone said. And I was like, how are you, what episode have you been watching, buddy?
Just go back to this to the moon jail until we need you. But then at
Yep.
that point, you know, would they really be loyal enough to fight that war, or would they turn on them? Just give them their own. I mean, if you can't fix them, just give them another city. You know, give them take them off the moon, let them walk around and on the, you know, the planet, but just give them their own little area that they could do whatever they want to do.
And by the time they were going to do that, it was too late, and the inmates had already seized power. Like, at that
Okay.
point, it was like, you can try and fight us if you want. We're super soldiers.
So Graham doesn't want to go to the planet where the super soldiers have collapsed the government and, you know, may or may not be killing everyone because of their genetic programming.
But
That's
then again, if aside from these super soldiers, who else did they send to Moon Jail? I don't want to go to a planet where they have a moon jail.
Yeah, there's also no guaranteeing that the super soldiers are going to get rid of Moon Jail.
Send everyone who isn't a super soldier to Moon Jail? Moon Jail is going to be pretty
Everyone
crowded
they
at
don't
this point.
like.
Yeah, probably. All right. So the next one up is I don't know how if I'm pronouncing this right. Argratha? Argratha?
Argratha. I think it's
Argratha.
Argratha.
Which is the planet that we never actually saw this planet, I don't think. But we
No.
Chief O'Brien went there in the DS9 episode Hard Time, in which he was
Oh,
put
man.
in mind prison.
That
So
was rough.
I feel like you can almost just put any planet that Chief O'Brien has been to, you could probably put on this list.
Not necessarily Cardassia might be nice to visit as long as you weren't accused of crimes.
Yeah, well, on Cardassia, at least you have to be an enemy of the state has to want you, right? Like,
Yeah.
if the, you know, you have to have like the, there has to be some reason the Cardassian military or something wants to mess with you. So if you're just some random
Yeah.
person, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah, either the Cardassian military has to want to frame you up, or like you have to be actually doing something, or a Bajoran, because they don't like them.
Well, yes. So the episode we're talking about is the one where Chief O'Brien has he had to go through basically what he thought were 20 years of hard prison ter of like hard prison for a crime that he didn't actually do, but in fact they were not 20 years of hard time. They were 20 years just inside his mind that passed in a few seconds, which
Well, and
was.
it was like almost isolation, except there was the one other person that he ended up killing. So then there was
Yep.
the remorse and the regret, and yeah, that was a total mind
Also,
screw
all the
job.
learned prison habits, like how he rolled off his bed and slept on the floor, and like
Yeah.
started threatening dudes in the Replimat.
Yeah, no, that was definitely it's a good episode. I wish that they had carried on with his PTSD a little bit more because he seemed fine the next episode. But you know, it's still like an episode where they really acknowledge that like PTSD is a real problem, and unlike other episodes where they sometimes act like PTSD is just all in your head and you know, just walk it off, you'll be fine. Like in this episode, they were really like, no, this is a serious thing that happens, and people who this happened to need our help. So for that, it's really good. But I don't want to go to that planet.
Yeah, exactly. The Hard Time is a great episode, but I do not want to meet those people because they have a mind prison. It's like the punishment box. I don't want to be in that.
Except you're in it for 20 years and you think you have this whole life experience, and then oh, you're done. Get it. You're out. You're ready to go. Like you would totally need some counseling, like PTSD. But it's like nope, you're done. Your 20 minutes are over. You thought it was 20 years. Now go back to your life. It's like, yeah, you're kind of going to be screwed after that.
So the hold on we have one another next up is the again this moon doesn't have a name. It's the place with the Ennis and the Knoll Ennis in the episode DS9 Battle Lines, which at first would seem too obvious to be on this list, right? Because it's a, it's you know, it's a place where people are fighting forever, But they did try to give us hope at the end of the episode when Kaio Paco was like, no, I'll stay and I'll help them not fight anymore. So, Graham, do you not have confidence in the peacemaking abilities of Kaio Paco?
Can I plead the fifth on that?
The Bajorans are going to get you, Graham. They don't take kindly to anyone bad-mouthing Kaio Paco.
They don't take kindly to anyone bad-mouthing any religious figure. You say anything bad about a Bajoran religious figure, and then it's Bajoran infallibility time.
Well, but even still, let's give her the benefit of the doubt. She makes peace, everybody's happy and all that. But all that, the planet has still got the nanites, it's still got the shield. Like, what if you go, you know, camping, or you go, you know, mountain climbing, and you slip and fall and you die? You're screwed. You got the nanites, you're going to be stuck on that planet. So it's not just about whether they are still at war or not.
Also, the planet was super barren. Like, it was a horrible blasted wasteland. So, yeah, rock you slide. Made peace on the horrible blasted wasteland full of rock slides. Great.
Although, interestingly enough, I wonder what was recycling the oxygen for that planet. Because, like, you know, I didn't see any plants. Maybe there were
Maybe
plants
it was the
somewhere
microbes.
Else. Yeah, that's possible. It's hard to have a planet of, like, you know, it's hard to have a desert planet, or not as like a desolate, like, cave planet, but also have breathable air. Like, there has to be something creating that air somewhere. Unless the Federation just has this policy of dumping air on every planet it goes to, which I suppose is possible. Then the next one you have on the list is Meridian, from the DS9 episode Meridian, as we might suspect, which is the planet that shifts into existence every 60 years or so and spends the rest of its time, like, out of phase, and was basically Star Trek trying to do Brigadoon.
Yeah, and everyone lives in a state of pure consciousness, except that you can only reproduce or anything in the short time period that you're corporeal, and that time period is constantly getting shorter. And apparently, I think they tried to correct it in the episode, but they weren't explicit about whether they actually corrected it.
They may have corrected it. Plus, I mean, Dax's kind of boring boyfriend is there, and I'd be fine not having to see him again.
Yeah. Also, he's going to be really upset in the next 60 years because his girlfriend dead.
Oh, darn. We did have Jeffrey Combs as Tyrone, the guy that wanted the Kira holosuit.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
The B plot, the custom porn B plot. Which must be a huge industry in the holodeck future. Like, you know,
seriously.
Just, like, I mean, we get people doing that now, right? Where it's all like uncanny valley of like photoshopping someone's head onto someone else's body. If you could just do that in a holodeck, like,
Well, but that we could also bring that up maybe on the next legal issue, legal episode, because he wanted Kira in that, you know, holo suite adventure, I guess we'll call it. And then they you know, trick him and put Quark's head on it. But that, like, now, today, we see people that try to do the candid, you know, photos or the upskirts or all the different, you know, people out in the malls or out in the park, and people don't give their permission to take their photo, and especially for that reason. I wonder what, in the future, when, you know, it's not just a flat photograph, but a holographic representation, like 3D and I wonder if there's legal, you know, reasons to restrictions on that, to like, you can't just take holographic images of people without their knowledge, because who knows what you're going to do with it. You're going to have a Barclay, you know, holodeck full of all these people.
Yeah, that's possible. And like, it was actually mentioned on another podcast I was listening to, they were talking about this episode where the guy at one point said something like, I want a realistic depiction of Kira, and they thought it would have been hilarious if Quark had said okay, and then like Kira had been there and he would have started making the moves on Holo Kira, and she just like punched him in the face or something. You know, this is the realistic Kira you wanted.
Yeah, instead of being all submissive or whatever. But what was the reason why Dax couldn't shift over with them? Was it her symbiont? Was it something else weird science thing?
It was science,
something
I think.
Like that. Yeah,
it was some kind of technobabble. I don't think there was anything special about Dax. I think it was just that she wasn't part of the original planet, so she couldn't shift over with them. Which is good for us, I guess, because that would have been a really disappointing way to lose Dax in the third season. Just been like, and Dax is just gone now. And be like, oh, come back, Dax. We hardly knew ye. Now, our next planet is, I think this was one of David's picks, was that Eminar 7, which is from the TOS episode, what is it called? Isn't it called A Taste of Armageddon?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot to put. And that's the one where, I mean, they kind of undo it at the end where, you know, Prime Directive, oh, screw that. We're going to interfere with these people. It's the planet where they had the computer war, where it's like they find out that, you know, the several different governments or two governments are having a war entirely on the computer. And then it's like, oh, this city is designated destroyed. So now everybody has to go walk into the disintegration chamber because the city was destroyed on the computer. I don't want to go to that planet where you're just hanging out and it's like, what? I'm perfectly fine. This building didn't get blown up or anything. But, oh, wait, now you got to go walk into a disintegration chamber because the computer tells you to. No thanks.
Well, to be fair, the planet did have an automated stay away from here signal.
It did have that. And again, in this episode, we see the Federation directive to make contact at all cost. Like, even if the person doesn't want to talk to you, like the Federation, some of these early episodes kind of strikes me as like a door-to-door salesman. Just being like, you know, like put up signs that say no solicitors, don't answer the door, you know, say like, please go away, I'm not interested. And they're just like, no, we want to talk to you.
Live our way. It's like, you know, almost the Borg, but a nice Borg. Or, you know, hey, the Federation has technology for you. Live our way. Our way is better.
Now, David, you also put down Gideon from the TOS episode. I don't remember the name of it, but it's...
Oh, I forgot to put the episode again.
But
go for it. I'm going to look up the title.
Okay. So that's the episode where Kirk is like on the Enterprise all by himself, except for some lady who claims she doesn't know how she got there and is totally lying, incidentally. And then the reveal is that they've been transported into like a model of the Enterprise on like this super, super isolated, like super, super overcrowded planet where it's
the
really
mark
creepy.
Of Gideon.
Yeah. And everyone like stands around under like green light in these really creepy like white jumpsuits. Now, David, why would you not want to go there? Doesn't that sound like a paradise? Creepy green people planet?
Well, I kind of don't like people. I mean, I like individual persons. You know, I like individual people, you know, a person. I could even admire and you know, enjoy being around a people, you know, some, but not, I don't like people enough to be elbow to elbow, you know. It's like they're packed in worse than sardines, and I don't want to have to wear the green jumpsuit, and especially at certain times where they're, you know, in some scenes they're just filing past the window. Other times when Kirk starts to notice them, all of them are looking into the window at Kirk, and I don't want that many people looking at me while I do whatever I do, and I just don't want to be around that many people or, you know, crowds that big. And you just have no privacy. You know, you're smelling everybody. You're hearing everybody. It's just, no, thank you.
Then, like, the living space is standing room only. That's not fun.
Also, this is the government that is... So they are so about preserving life that they are not okay with birth control, but they are okay with murdering people.
Like, well, imagine that. You just mentioned birth control, and now you marry somebody, I guess, because you know that's what you do. You fall in love and get married. Now, how do you conceive your children when there's like elbow to elbow with everybody? That's just a community event now. But then you notice in the Gideon High Council chamber, they didn't have everybody packed in. So like the government gets to have their rooms where it's not, you know, elbow to elbow, but out in the street, out in the public. Yeah. You're going to be having people touch you where you don't want people touching you.
Man, on that planet, instead of getting mad that like CEOs are getting like, you know, $1 million bonuses, they're going to be like, man, that government minister, he got like a 5 square meter bonus. That's crazy.
He has four walls, man. Four of them.
We need to live like the common man.
He could stretch his arms out, you know, horizontal. Now, but the thing, this episode was where they basically wanted Kirk's diseases, because the Kirk, you know, had a virus, you know, carried a virus, to, you know, is fine because you get sick and you get over it. But they never had that sickness, and so the leader guy basically wants his daughter to get sick and die so that they could introduce death and then, you know, not be so overcrowded. That's just kind of messed up.
Please give us your smallpox so that we can die in droves and our planet will be less crowded.
But no birth control. We would never do that.
Oh, right.
Okay, so the next one that I have on the list, this isn't really much of an explanation. It's from, I don't think this planet ever got a name. At least I don't remember its name. But the planet is from the Enterprise episode North Star, and it's Cowboy Planet. And it's really dumb, and you should never go there, because no one likes Cowboy Planet. But I don't think, actually I discovered, much to my chagrin, that some people do like Cowboy Planet recently. But I don't like Cowboy Planet, and I don't want to go there. Especially
no, Cowboy Planet sounds pretty stupid.
Since it's in the middle of like an otherwise very interesting story arc that we're doing every once in a while, like David and Grace and I have been going through the Zindi arc, and it's actually not bad. Like, there's some cool stuff in the Zindi arc, but then like sometimes they take a break to go to Cowboy Planet or go to the planet with the psychic creeper guy, and like, you know, you just shouldn't go to those planets. Just fly past them and continue with your Zindi story.
Especially when on the Cowboy Planet they actually hang people.
They do. So the next planet that you actually should not go to is Tarrakis, it's called. And that's the episode from the Voyager episode Memorial, because it has the PTSD-inducing Memorial. It's this giant psychic beacon that forces you to experience traumatic war events. And Voyager, at the end of the episode,
why?
Fixes it and leaves it behind because it's a war memorial, David. And we war memorials are important, so we don't forget the war. And it's
I get that part, but then why make people? I guess that would deter people from having another war if they walk by this memorial, and then all of a sudden they're feeling the pain and agony, and my leg blowed off, and then you walk past it, but you say Voyager, it was what? Did it get broken? You said Voyager fixed it and left it there active.
Yeah, in the Voyager episode, when they encounter it and they start getting these flashbacks and having terrible war experiences, they only get them in like stops and starts. Like, not everyone gets them at the same time because it's breaking. Because it's like, you know, it was not designed to last forever, and so they have the option of shutting it off or leaving it there. And Janeway decides to fix it and like put out a warning buoy, I guess. And I mean, the idea that this is a good way to prevent war is kind of like, well, I could prevent crime by stabbing everyone in the leg. You know, if I did that, it would be very hard for anyone to like steal stuff if they were all hobbling along because
I
stabbed them in the leg.
Well, it's more, Orin, it's more like, let me create a device that makes you feel my mugging or the crime that happened to me. And that will obviously teach you not to do crimes.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it just feels like such ridiculous overkill, right? Like, you know, you're trying, like, you know, like a war, the reason it had to be like a psychic war memorial was that it wouldn't really be much of a story if they went and looked at like a really poignant memorial like the Vietnam War Memorial. I don't know if either of you guys have seen that, but it's in Washington DC and it's a fantastic memorial. Like, it, you know, it really brings home how bleak that conflict was, and it makes you not want to have a conflict like that ever again. But it doesn't reach out and hurt you. So it wouldn't make a very interesting episode. The crew would just be looking at this memorial and being like, yeah, guys, we shouldn't have a war. And then they would go on, and that would be the end of the episode. But like, just the fact that Janeway decided to leave this thing on, which is this incredibly dangerous device that really feels more like a weapon than a memorial. It's like something you would drop on a planet to incapacitate its population because they're all having terrible like war flashbacks.
Right, it's not going to injure their body, but it's going to mess with their mind and their emotional state, because now they're going to have the after effect of PTSD. That's like, that's not pretty cool to do to your people.
Yeah, and I referenced this earlier when we were talking about the Mind Prison episode with O'Brien, and in the Mind Prison episode, they really treated PTSD as the incredibly serious problem that it is, right? Like, just because it was mental doesn't mean it's not a serious problem. But in Tarrakis, they kind of treat the whole thing like, oh, that was just kind of a romp that we had, as if just because it was mental that none of it mattered, right? That it has no lasting effects. It was all in your head, which is, I feel, incredibly disrespectful to the original point of the episode, which is that war is bad. And it's like, you know, you're basically telling everyone who has PTSD not to worry because it was all in their head. Which I think is awful, and I don't think that's what they meant, but that was what the implication that I got from it.
Well, I mean, yeah, even if you don't take that implication, it raises the problematic idea that, don't worry, your PTSD is a valuable lesson not to have wars. And it's like, No, it's not. It's a horrible mental disability. Don't say that to people.
And there are so many other ways to get the point across that people should, you know, there shouldn't be wars without having to make people experience it.
Yeah.
All right. So the next planet, which is significantly less horrible and depressing, is actually two planets, the Delos system from the TNG episode Symbiosis. And for those who don't remember, Symbiosis is the episode in the first season. It's actually one of the better first season episodes where they come across the planet that is entirely drug dealers and the planet that is entirely drug addicts. But the planet that is entirely drug addicts doesn't know that they're taking drugs. They think that they're taking medicine to stop a plague. But and then when they stop taking it, they think they get the plague, but actually they're getting drug withdrawals. And it's one of those ones where Beverly is like, we have to tell them. And Picard is like, I can't tell them. Prime directive. But then he turns the prime directive on the drug dealers and is like, I won't help. I won't tell them about the drugs, but I'm also not going to fix your drug dealing ship. And then, you know, they'll have to get off the drug on their own and you'll be out of a drug dealing job. It's also the episode, people might know it as the one where they do the drugs are bad, MK scene on the bridge with Wesley, which makes no sense in the context of the episode because no one in that episode is taking drugs willingly.
Well, Wesley is a teen, so he might think that drugs are cool.
You know, those teens, always with the drugs. So the reason that I don't want to go to this planet, either of these two planets, is that they establish that these people have, like, weird lightning powers, like in one scene where that they used to take Riker hostage, which was kind of odd, but they have them. So you have one planet, which is an entire planet of people with lightning powers who are going through drug withdrawal. And that doesn't sound like a fun place to be. And then you have the other planet, which is an entire planet who they've said their entire like planet is geared to producing this drug. So they have no farming, they have no industry, they have no way to produce anything that they need. So what you have on that planet is a collapsing civilization of drug dealers, also with lightning powers.
A planet of a meth lab, a planetary meth lab.
With no one to sell the meth to.
Yep.
Neither of these are places that I want to go. I think I would get lightning pretty quick. Now, the next one up is called, all right, I'm going to see if I can pronounce this correctly, Gamma Trianguli. Gamma Trianguli? Gamma Trianguli 7, or no, 6, VI, 6, which is from the TOS episode The Apple. Now, have either of you guys seen that episode?
Yeah, I've seen that.
That has the computer god.
Yeah, Voth, and the feeders of Voth. And this is one of the many episodes where Kirk runs into a godlike computer and kills it, because that's just kind of what Kirk does, right? But
computer bad.
Right, but unlike some of the other episodes that, you know, that where they do this, the feeders of Voth are, like, entirely dependent on Voth. Like, there are only 20 of them. So they don't have a breeding population. They don't know how to take care of themselves. They've been living on this planet where their environment and their food supply and their lifespans have all been artificially controlled by a computer. And Kirk just kind of blows it up and says, "All right, guys, you're fine." And the reason I don't want to go to this planet is there would just be a pile of corpses, just a bunch of dead feeders of all just hanging out.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's about it. I don't want to go there because of that. Now the next one, I think this is David put this on the list, is David, how do you pronounce this? I don't know how to pronounce that.
That would be Iota Geminorum. And this planet has been referenced through TOS all the way through DS9, and thankfully, it has been obliterated. But while it was still in existence, I would definitely not want to go there, because that is the homeworld of the Tribbles. Disgusting, vile creatures. I would not want to go to the Tribble homeworld.
Tribbles are adorable. They're adorable little biological weapons.
No, they are disgusting, detestable, vile creatures. All they do is eat your food, eat your resources. They breed like crazy. And there's no value or worth to them at all. They're an ecological menace. And the Klingons tried their best to eradicate them from existence, and they obliterated the Tribble homeworld. But of course, time traveling Starfleeters have to go and repopulate the species on DS9. But on the actual planet, it has been said that there was a reptile that fed on the Tribbles and pretty much kept their population in check, because, you know, that's cool for the reptiles. There's a never-ending food supply, because they're born pregnant, they keep reproducing, and you just have to just kick back and, you know, your food supply replenishes itself. But once the reptiles got, taken away, or the Tribbles were moved to another place, they just breed and breed and then eat and breed and eat and breed.
Here's a question that might, I guess, be best saved for a Tribble episode. Has anyone tried to eat a Tribble? Are they disgusting tasting? If you got rid of all the hair, whatever might be really tasty.
Well, there's just not a whole lot of there. I mean, after you take away the food, most of it is
so many to cook.
Yeah, I guess you could easily harvest a whole pile full. But there actually has been a cross section of a Tribble that is, you know, to see what their anatomy, and it there ain't much meat on it. It's a lot of the womb and the I don't know. I guess
think Klingons at least would be okay with eating that, because I mean they have Gok.
Well, here's the thing about Tribbles. I think the reason the Tribbles are not a viable food crop or food product is that they are incredibly inefficient, because they spend so much of their energy reproducing, the energy they get from their food, that almost none of it goes into actually being a Tribble. There's not really any meat. It's mostly hair and reproduction organs, which are probably not very nutritious. And you know how you have to grow 10 pounds of food to grow 1 pound of beef? Tribbles are probably way worse than that. It's probably 1,000 pounds of food for 1 pound of edible Tribble.
I just put a link into the IRC chat room, the cross section of the Tribble. Take a look. There's not a whole lot there to use. So, but I have, honestly though, there has been people that have talked about baked Tribble and Tribble kebabs, and I guess some people would eat them. I don't think that's a big delicacy or a big, done too often with Klingons, because we like meat on actual meat, and we tend to have things that are either alive or not really cooked, prepared but not so much burnt, because that spoils the meat and that just ruins good meat. So not every Klingon food is a living, alive. And there are plants and some vegetables and stuff that we would eat as well, but yeah, when I see a Tribble, I just want to shoot it with a disruptor or stab it with a knife or, just beam it out into space. But we tried the Great Tribble Hunt. We still sing songs, but it got repopulated. So I definitely would never want to go, there is time travel issues, and I'm glad it's obliterated the planet, but I would never want to go there. I feel sorry for any Klingon that ended up there.
Although, there was one JJ comic that actually had a really cool depiction of that planet where, the things that eat the Tribbles are basically, vacuum cleaner rhinos. They looked kind of neat.
And just to give a shout-out, the Klingons did engineer the Glommer, which is a small animal that is basically its whole function in existence is to eat Tribbles. And it's, got teeth on the bottom of it, basically a tiny little sarlacc pit of teeth. And it's got long legs where it would just walk on top of the Tribble and lower itself down and just eat the Tribble. I definitely want me a Glommer in Star Trek Online, or just, I want a Glommer just in case.
The Glommer plushie. All right. So moving on up the list, we had Beta 3, which was from TOS's Return of the Archons. And that was actually Grace's pick, and Grace is not here today. So I'll maybe ask her about that when she gets back. Then we had the Shoreleaf planet. But David actually picked that as the planet he wants to go to, so I'm going to save that until we. And I'll ask David what he's thinking. So the next, we're in the last three now. So the number three of planets that I picked that I don't want to go to is called a Tanuga 4, which is from the TNG episode A Matter of Perspective, which is the episode we actually talked about this. With Elise last time, where That's the episode where they have the trial by holodeck, where, it's like Star Trek does Rashomon, like Riker has been accused of murdering this doctor, and they do like three different versions of what they think happened and try to get at the truth.
Here's my version. Roll the tape.
Yes, and according to Elise, our resident prosecutor, that's actually a thing that would be very useful in modern courts because they have all these issues with trying to clearly communicate to the jury what they're saying. So instead of having to do that, they could just show them what they mean in a holodeck.
Well, if
But
that's the case, why use a holodeck? Why not hire actors so people could actually, have a job and a function and have the court theater instead of just holodeck?
all right. So, but with that aside, the reason you don't want to go to this planet, even though it seems like a nice planet, it's like got a scientist who's working on creating some kind of energy source and what have you. The reason that I don't want to go there is because in their justice system, you are guilty until you are proven innocent. And unlike on Cardassia, where in Cardassia, in order to get that treatment, like you have to have done something to make the state angry at you, which is terrible, mind you. I wouldn't want to live on Cardassia, but I wouldn't mind visiting it, since chances of the Cardassian state having a beef with me are not high. But on Tanuga 4, anyone who you make angry can accuse you of a crime, and then you have to prove you didn't do it. Do you have any idea how hard it is to prove you didn't do something? It's like, what time? It's like, well, I could have murdered that guy. I was alone for 6 hours when he was murdered. Like, prove you didn't. How can I prove I didn't? Like, I don't have any witnesses.
Is there any forensic evidence? No, then you are screwed.
And you better be a good holodeck programmer.
Seriously.
Well, there's that. Mainly
You
just
better hope
like.
no one can replicate forensic evidence against you, too.
Like, the whole concept of guilty until proven innocent is just very terrifying for me to think of.
Yeah. I mean that was kind of the point in the tri in Tribunal, which was the episode of Deep Space Nine where the Cardassian justice system is showcased. It's like this is a crazy justice system. No one should be put through it.
And I was actually listening to an NPR broadcast a little while back where they were talking about how the prevalence of like Law and Order type shows and cop shows has given people this idea that everyone's guilty. And I don't know how widespread a problem that is, but apparently that is a thing that defense lawyers have to deal with now, is this concept that because you were accused, you're guilty, because that's almost always how it ends up on these crime shows. 'Cause they don't want to spend the entire episode with the characters prosecuting some guy didn't turn out he didn't do it, right?
I'd actually say that I'm on a lot of on Law and Order and a lot of its variants, they've gotten better about that.
Oh,
They'll
really?
have a guy who look at least in I was I've used to watch a lot of Special Victims Unit, and they had at least there they'd usually have one guy who they suspected initially, and then it would turn out to be another guy. And in the more recent Law and Orders, they've been going through a lot more episodes where either the prosecutorial office gets it wrong, or they lose because they're just not able to prove their case, or they don't have the right evidence, and or McCoy has them do something underhanded because he's the DA now. So they're
Yeah.
getting better about that.
All right. Well, maybe that it's possible that I the, that NPR report may have been, may not have been correct. I was just listening to it. It sounded interesting. So hang on. I look up the next one on the list. So the next planet we're finally here, David, is Rubicon. Rubicon, I think is how you say that. Rubicon 3, home of the Edo people from the TNG episode Justice, known as Keep Off the Grass Planet.
Anyone who commits any crime in the punishment zone dies?
And they like to run a lot.
And apparently they do things at the drop of a hat, according to Tasha Yar. And the really like weird thing about that planet is that apparently they don't advertise that aspect of their justice system, because like Tasha Yar went through their justice system supposedly, and she didn't see that, which leads me to believe that she was either doing really shoddy research, maybe because someone had dropped a hat, we don't know.
Maybe
But
she just wasn't in the punishment zone at the time.
maybe, but like the other thing, I think it's more likely. Tell visitors about this. They're just like, what? No, that's not. No. Oh, you committed a crime in the punishment zone. All right, get out the lethal injection. And of course, like I thought there was one part where the one of the guys from that planet is like, well, you could just beam Wesley away, and then you would have, and he says it sarcastically, he's like, and you would have used your superior technology to save one of your people from a backwards and barbaric world. And I'm like, yes, that actually is exactly what would have just happened. But apparently you can't do that because then the god alien will get mad if you don't respect their stupid punishment zone laws.
I just don't want to go to a planet where, you know, randomly, because it changes every day, and they don't tell you which is the punishment zone, so you could be doing, and I read a synopsis about it on Memory Alpha, and it said, you know, the point of that god alien thing was that it wanted everybody to be living under the fear of being killed, because any little crime, and, you know, and also, entering the punishment zone means you're automatically going to die. And so it's like, they seem happy and idyllic, and, you know, they're running around in their little, you know, miniature toga type clothing or whatever. And all of us, but deep under that facade, they're like, am I going to get killed? Am I in the punishment zone? Where was it yesterday? Oh, wait, where is it today? They're just freaking out, but, you know, they have their little fake veneer over them where they know they could die at any minute.
And this is, again, if I wish Elise was here, we could ask her, but my understanding has always been that, like, the certainty of punishment has always been a much more effective deterrent than the severity of punishment. That's always been my understanding. And since when you're on this planet, your chances of being punished are actually very low, because you have to commit the crime in a random punishment zone where there's apparently only one. So if you're not in that zone on, like, the entire planet, maybe it was even just that city, but, you know, this entire large area, you can basically do whatever you want. I would actually feel like that would probably lead to a lot of crime, as people would just decide, well, I'm just going to roll the dice and hope I'm not in the punishment zone today when I need to commit this crime. I'm not sure
I wonder how often people would, like, you know, grab a friend, or maybe not a friend, but grab somebody and throw them into the next area and think, is that the punishment zone? Oh, wait, no, he's fine, so I could go in there now. It's like, you know, having other people go test the waters to find out where the zone is.
That's terrible, David.
Well, as I pointed out, you could, find out where the punishment zone is, throw a guy in there, and then either yell that he committed a crime, and they're like, oh, he probably committed a crime, it's time for lethal injection, or get him to yell that you committed a crime, and then you're like, that's perjury, because I didn't, and I can prove it. And then he gets dead by lethal injection because he was in the punishment zone and he perjured at you.
Yeah, well, that's anyone you don't like, just throw him into the punishment zone.
Or just get in, like, a fight with him, and then, like, you're fighting to the death, and then he's in the punishment zone and you're not. So you're not guilty of a crime, but he is, because he's trying to murder you in the punishment zone.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Well, and it gets even worse because it's not just committing a crime like murder or theft or robbery or, you know, it's walking on the grass. That was the crime, that, you know, you must die now, because it's like, that's the crime. Okay, Wesley was in the punishment zone, but he didn't, you know, hit somebody, he didn't steal anything, or, and just, nope, you get on the grass, you're dead. I don't want to go there.
All right, so the last one that I have on the list is, again, I don't think this planet ever got a name, but it was the planet where the Mari people lived, and it was in the Voyager episode Random Thoughts. And this is the episode where it's a planet of telepaths, and they are so sensitive to other people's emotions that, like, if you get angry near one, even if it's just, like, a momentary burst of irritance because someone, like, stepped on your toe or something, like, they will fly into a manic rage, and then that will be your fault. Which is, like, sort of like a planet where they put you in jail for blinking. You know, like, it's an involuntary reflex. You can't control it, but they'll put you, but they'll, like, lobotomize you for it. Cause they end up trying to do that to Torres, where it's like, you know, Torres gets mad and some guy near her, like, flips out and stabs somebody because she was angry for a few seconds. Yeah.
Do not remember seeing this episode, but that's a cray cray planet.
It's totally crazy. And it, like, what ends up happening is, they take Torres prisoner, and they're going to, like, do, like, a mind wipe on her to erase the negative, the angry emotion, which I'm not sure how that's going to undo the crime exactly, but it has a chance of just causing her, like, permanent brain damage. And Janeway is just kind of like, okay, we have to let them do it. We have to respect their laws. And the only way they get Torres out of it is by proving that the anger didn't actually come from her, that it had come from, like, an underground, like, you know, anger smuggling ring.
What?
I'm not even joking.
Oh, sure. Blame the Klingon or the half Klingon. But they're smuggling emotions, right? And then they get loose or something.
Negative they were emotions. Smuggling emotion. I can't even. Thanks, Voyager. I will also jot another notch down on the Catherine Janeway, a mother to her people ? Chart.
Maybe. And it makes me think that they ran into another alien species in a much better episode called Counterpoint that hated telepaths, like all telepaths forever. And it makes me wonder if the Mari were the first telepaths that those people encountered.
It would not surprise me. It's like, oh, you had a fear response. That made one of our people jump off a cliff. We will kill your entire landing party.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if your people really are, like, that sensitive to being near others, you should put up giant warning buoys saying, do not come here. You will infect us with your emotions. We're sorry, but please stay away. But no, apparently they invite people down to trade and don't even warn them that this could happen. So, yeah, I
never
go to that.
They're in the Delta Quadrant with the Kazon. They should really have warnings up.
Fortunately, by this point, Voyager had left the Kazon behind. This was like a season 5 episode. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of people. Like, you know, imagine if like a Hirogen had landed on that planet. And like the Hirogen would have that constant like hunting instinct going. Like everyone on that planet would start hunting each other for sport. Which on the other hand, maybe I would go to watch that. But
that would be kind of hilarious, yeah.
So that's the end of my list. And there are a lot of other planets that you don't want to go to. Like, you know.
I was going to name one more.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I think it's called the Janai planet, or maybe that's the name of the planet.
Oh, yeah,
from
that one.
The Outcast, where you can't have a gender, and if you get a gender, they will brainwipe you.
Yeah, well, that planet is definitely terrible. And there are a lot of other really terrible planets, like, you know, the planet from Code of Honor, and Eden, which is full of dead space hippies, and the episode
and the Vidian homeworld.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them and just Tasha Yar's home planet. I didn't reference those ones just because they seemed obvious. Like, I was trying to stick with planets that it was not immediately clear why you wouldn't want to go there.
I wouldn't want to go to the Pakled planet just because, I don't know, they're Pakled.
Pakleds.
Just because that's plenty of planet. The planet is full of Pakleds.
I wouldn't want to go to any planet with the Skreeans on it.
Well, fortunately, there's only one. Probably. I don't think they would.
Didn't they go to a Vajor moon, though?
No, they had some other planet that Sisko and Starfleet had found for them. But because they're the most entitled race in the galaxy, they were like, no, we don't want your planet. We want this planet. Because, God, Skreeans. Ugh. Thanks to early DS9. Okay. So, so we've gone for an hour. I want to talk about the planets that we do want to go to, just so that we're not, you know, 100% negative all the time, forever. So I actually had three. And the first one, which is not a serious pick, but I do kind of want to do this. I want to go to Valakis, which is the planet from Dear Doctor, because I want to give them the cure to the virus, or to that plague thing that they have that Phlox wouldn't cure them of, because watching Dear Doctor makes me feel guilty. Like, you know, some people have white guilt. I have Trekkie guilt. I feel bad that Star Trek didn't fix these people, and I want to go there and help. Man, that was just not... there was not a reaction to that. You guys were just like, yeah, Oren, go ahead.
No, nope, I was just, like, nodding, like, yeah.
I didn't watch Enterprise much, yeah. So... I didn't
Fair
watch
enough.
Enterprise at all, really. Mostly because you told me it was really terrible, and then I did independent research on how terrible it might be, and it was like, this sounds really terrible, I don't want to watch it.
I'd say give it a shot. I mean, it's Trek. I mean, I actually, both Voyager and Enterprise, I didn't like so much when it was new, because I kept comparing them to TNG and DS9, but the more I watch it, like on Netflix, I'm able to, you know, my appreciation has increased over time, and there are some interesting characters and situations, and you know, it's Trek, and I would say give it a shot.
Okay, so so my two serious picks are basically two different sides of the same coin, and they are Talos 4, which is the planet from The Cage, the original pilot of Star Trek, and then Omicron SETI 3, which is the planet from This Side of Paradise. And the Talos 4 has the Talosians, who can make you experience like whatever you want. You know, it seems completely real to you. But
it's their agenda. They're not just gonna like make it a Disney, like a theme park.
Well, unless you have something that they want, right? You know, like, I don't know if I'd want to live there, but I'd be willing to visit and see if I could bargain, like, you know, my ultimate fantasy for a while. Be like, you know, yeah, guys, I've always wanted to be, like, king of the universe. Can you just make me think I'm king of the universe for a few hours? That could be fun. But the real one that I want to go to is Omicron Ceti 3, which is the planet from this side of paradise. And for anyone who doesn't remember, that's the planet where there are flowers that shoot confetti at you, and the confetti makes you happy and healthy forever. And Spock has a girlfriend, and the only one who's not happy and healthy forever is Kirk, because Kirk hates not having to suffer. And Kirk gets really mad that he doesn't have, that people don't have to suffer on this planet, and he yells at everyone and forces them off the planet. And I would go live with that planet in, like, a heartbeat, because it's, you're healthy, like, forever. And you're happy, but you're not like, you know, like zombie mode. Like, you can still do stuff. You know, if I wanted to write stories, I could just do that, like, all day. Or I could decide I just want to run role-playing games or build a house or whatever. I wouldn't have to, but I could if I want, you know.
Or hang upside down from a tree like Spock.
Yeah, why not? You know, you got a lot of time now.
Well, that kind of goes along with my pick that came to mind immediately. And I looked for the notes of it, and it was only in the script that they called it Finagle's Planet. And this was also listed, I think, was it by Oren, as someplace he would not want to go?
Yeah,
but I want to go there. It's the episode, original series episode, Shore Leave. And that's the one where, you know, Bones sees the big white rabbit with the little girl, you know, basically, you know, Alice in Wonderland stuff. One of the Enterprise crewmen women is like, thinks, imagines, and then becomes like a princess, you know, like a big fantasy thing. And so it basically turns, and then Kirk, one of his, you know, old chums from the academy appears, and they don't understand it right off the bat, like, what's going on. It turns out anything you imagine becomes reality or comes to life or manifests in front of you, and you can interact with it. You could, you know, and so they don't understand it at first, and that leads to issues, and, you know, somebody thinks they died. But it turns out at the end of the episode, there's like a caretaker, I forget exactly what they call it, but there's like a host that comes out and says, this planet is for entertainment, for relaxation. Anything you imagine comes to life, but it's not permanent. So if you do die, it wasn't that your issue? You didn't want to die over and over?
Right, that was my problem with it, was that unlike the other two planets, like, if you go there and die, like, you actually die. Now, they bring you back to life, sure, but, like, I don't want to experience getting stabbed with a lance. Like, that's not something I
just
want.
Just don't imagine a night with a lance.
Don't imagine anything lethal.
Right, just think of, you know, fun things. But see, I'm, you know, being a Klingon perspective, I would like to fight, you know, you can imagine all different manner of foe, and then fight them in different, you know, medieval weapons, and then go to, you know, old style weapon, you know, pistols, and then, or swords, and then you could do hand to hand combat, and you could, you know, have fun, challenge yourself, you know, it's almost like a holodeck where it becomes reality, not, you know, photons and force fields, but you don't have to do fighting. You could imagine yourself a ship's captain on the sea, or you could, you know, whatever you imagine. But like it said, it's not going to be permanent. So if you do die, or if you do, you know, turn into something weird, once shore leave is over, you're back to normal. Everything's good. And so I would like to have fun at the planet, you know, imagining weird things and fun things, and, you know, just having a good old time. And maybe you could imagine that there's a flower that shoots confetti and gives you a buzz. Like, you could almost, it's like the world is, you know, at your pleasure. Just, you can all think of all kinds of good stuff.
All right. So fair enough. The reason that I'm terrified of this planet is twofold. One is that I don't have a super disciplined control over my thoughts, like,
well,
all the time.
Part,
you know,
of the fun too of it. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
No, but I mean, like, I don't know, maybe I'm about to sound like a crazy person, but, you know, when I meet a friend of mine, like a very dear friend, we'll be talking, and for, like, no reason at all, a thought will pop into my mind. It would be like, what would happen if that person was on fire? And I don't want them to be on fire.
Okay.
Like, they're my best friend. I don't want them on fire, but, like, my brain has weird random thoughts that happen, and I don't think I'm the only person this happens to.
You You would be the one that would summon the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Like, what did you do, Orin?
Yeah, or like, no, I see where he's coming from. Like, what if you got depressed on that planet? Or you got depressed before you came down to the planet and you were having really dark thoughts? That could end up real bad real quick.
Or, like, there's a Saturday morning breakfast cereal comic where the joke is the guy's, like, you know, the first panel is why I say that mind reading shouldn't be legal. And he's saying it's because the inside of your mind is the last true sanctum of privacy and no one has the right to violate that. And then the next panel is why I really think mind reading should be illegal. And it says, I don't know anyone who I haven't imagined killing or naked. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like that, right? Like, like my brain is not as perfectly like disciplined, organized place that only thinks what I want it to think, right? I sometimes, you know, you get like weird random thoughts that are not part of your conscious person. Like they don't define who you are, but from how sensitive that shore leave planet is, they might get, you know, they might get picked up and then like your friend would be on fire. And you're like, no, stop. I didn't want that.
Yeah. That are like, if you're a writer, God forbid you go to that planet. Cause you're like, I have this great idea for a really dark plot. Oh my God. I'm living it. I am living the most terrifying plot I ever came up with.
But your friend isn't on fire permanent. It's not going to be, you know, they may go, oh my God, I'm on fire. But, you know, but here's the thing. Everybody, you know, in the episode, you see certain people grouped up and, you know, Chekhov or I forget who was with the girl that turned into like the fairy tale princess type thing. But everybody would be like, hey, let's go check it out. This lake over here, or, you know, wanting to pair up or something. You would just be like, I'm going to go over here by myself and have some shore leave. So that way, whatever happens, nobody else has to either witness it or be, you know, killed by it. And then you could just explore your crazy, twisted fun. That could be the fun too, you know. Shore leave isn't always about being, you know, happy and playful. Maybe it's about working out some issues or something. But, you know, you could go in so many directions with it. But yeah,
the Lieutenant Barclay theorem.
You got to understand, I'm also terrified of pain. So, yeah, like, that, you know, that would be a problem for me. Like, if I imagine something that accidentally hurt me, I'd be like, this isn't fun anymore. Now I'm bleeding. I don't like it.
Also, on a side note, Oren, I looked up Vlakis, and holy shit, on Enterprise, they committed genocide. They straight up committed genocide on these people. The Federation's, like, first captain of the Enterprise committed genocide.
It's interesting that you haven't seen it. You should watch that episode and get back to me. Some people would argue that's not true, but that's a discussion for another time.
No, they were like, evolution needs to be able to take its course, and these people who have a genetic malady shouldn't be cured. They should be allowed to die and maybe have a couple painkillers while their lower caste takes over and evolves to something like super intelligent.
No, Grab, just go watch the episode. I want you to watch it and tell me what you think of it.
I don't want to watch Enterprise, though. Ah!
All right, so, Graham, what are your picks? What planet would you like to go to?
I actually had a really hard time deciding this one because I have a terrible memory for all the Paradise planets that they went to in Next Generation, and they didn't really go to as many planets that were very nice in DS9, which is the Trek series I remember best. So they went Riser, Bajor.
You don't want to go to the planet where they play the Alamarain and you know that one? That would be a fun planet.
Which planet?
the episode, the Move Along Home, where they're all about
Jesus
the games.
God, no. That's on my list of don't go there. Do not take me there. Don't take me anywhere near there because I'll invent a Death Star. I will like cross properties.
That planet is the do not pass go planet.
Yeah, I don't like that planet. Anyway, the ones that I thought I might like to visit were things like, I kept thinking of things that were kind of super interesting more than like super nice. And they were things like Romulus, because Romulus is actually really interesting culturally and has kind of all these Roman influences floating around in some actual alien stuff. And cool architecture.
And
you know,
free soup.
Also free soup. And while the Romulan government are not nice people, it seems like, you know, you could visit, it could still be cool. Or Borg Prime. If you could hide from the Borg and not get assimilated, it would be pretty great. Because you can see like how the Borg are when they're not assimilating people, which might not actually be all that interesting.
Go with the Hansen method of trying to monitor the Borg. You know, just follow them around and hope they don't notice you. It'll be great. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on best of both worlds, they, as long as they didn't start kicking the drones or shooting the drones left them alone. Then again, the drones are mostly sleeping, so it might not actually be that interesting on Borg Prime. You might have a bunch of drones sleeping or walking around.
Or then, alternatively, practicing highly choreographed group dance moves.
See, that'd be kind of cool, I think. And then the last one I thought of, and I think this would be my final pick if I had to pick between these three, would be the Terra Spheres that 8472 did, because if there is ever a species that had potential and then did not really get explored, I felt, it was 8472. Those guys were creepy
cool
looking, and they threatened the fucking Borg. Sorry for swearing in there, but they threatened the Borg. They were neat, and we never did anything with them. And then they had artificial planets that they could alter to be any kind of environment that they wanted, and that could alter their forms to look human. And it's like, that's really cool. I want to find out more about that kind of thing. My own like Terra Sphere type of stuff.
You want Planet Hologram, don't you? Planet Holodeck.
There's a lot to be said for Planet Holodeck.
Well, that kind of brings us back to the Finnegan's planet from Shore Leave. Just think of it, and it'll happen.
Fair enough. Now, of course,
I'm
going to
have more control than that.
Yeah, for Romulus, I would really want to... I've always wanted to know this. I don't think there's any canon material that explains this. I really want to know if the Romulan Senate is elected. Because they call it a Senate and, like, a republic. Like, you know, it sounds like they get elected, but they never actually say, and the Romulans don't seem like a democratic society. So I would really like to know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think, is there any planets that either of us remember, like, even in the chat room, I guess, where it's not so much about the culture or what goes on there, but just like the look of it, like, you know, either the sky or the plants, or is there any, I'm trying to even remember for myself, was there a standout planet where I just want to go there for the planet itself? And I'm trying to think, there's been some good, you know, landscapes or vistas in Trek, but I'm trying to think.
It's hard to go with that just because, like, Star Trek doesn't generally have a huge budget for alien planets. You know, like, there's a reason they recycle the same cave scene over and over and over again, right? Is it's like, that's the same cave set, and they use it for everything. And their outdoor shots are basically just whatever is outside of L.A., so their planets tend to look kind of samey. There was one planet...
Yeah, or matte paintings.
Yeah. The one planet I remember that I really wanted to see was... actually described, because they probably couldn't show it to us on screen, but the Blue Horizon, which was described by that crazy terraformer in the episode where Sisko was meeting the lady in the red dress, and the way he described Blue Horizon made me really want to go there. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a cool place, I'd like to visit, but they couldn't actually show us because it would have blown the budget. But I think we're pretty much at the end of our list, so thank you for joining us, Graham. It was good to have you.
You are welcome, you're welcome. I was glad to be on the show.
Yeah. Now, if you continue with us for next week, we will hopefully, if everything works out correctly, be doing a pre-recorded episode with Kathy Ferguson. And so I'm hoping that will be a lot of fun, and I hope you'll join us next week. Until then, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.